Would you pray with me? Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. The year is 426 AD, and the Bishop of Hippo, or present-day Algeria, has just finished another book. He'd been writing for decades, theological tomes and philosophical theories, and like any person invested in learning and growing, he had changed his mind over time, moving from one theological school to another. He's mature now. 72 years old, he had grown up in modern-day Africa to a Berber family. Indigenous to Africa, but heavily Romanized, speaking only Latin at home. He was proud to be a Roman, proud to be part of the greatest empire known to humankind. Or so it had been. The empire was falling, outwardly plagued by foreign wars and relentless invasion, inwardly plagued by civil war, religious animosity, and financial collapse. Misery heaped upon misery and failure heaped upon failure, and in 410 AD, the city of Rome was in famine when it was sacked by the Visigoths for 3 days. The violence was unspeakable. They desecrated temples and burned basilicas. They stole from the wealthiest senatorial families, people who had been thought to be untouchable. Romans were taken captive and sold into slavery and killed. They had thought this to be impossible. Rome was supposed to be invincible. It was believed to have been supernaturally protected. Rome had not fallen to an enemy for 800 years. And that Bishop of Hippo, he sat down to write amidst the ashes. He wanted to write something comforting, something that explained what had happened, something that buoyed people's faith in God in such a terrible time. And Saint Augustine wrote, City of God. He wrote about the foolishness of investing oneself in earthly empires, which are all bound to fall. And he wrote that the goal of the Christian life was to build oneself a kingdom in heaven for eternity. After all, he wrote, was not earth a fallen place? Was not humanity a fallen race? And he put together a story that we call the Fall. The story goes that it was Adam and Eve and that one tragic moment with the snake and the little bite of the apple that changed human nature once and for all, from a state of original blessing to a state of original sin. That when Adam ate from that apple, he corrupted his very nature. And then Adam and Eve had children, passing down their corrupted nature through sex to their children, who would then become all of humanity. Humanity was, in Augustine's opinion, a massa damnata, a mass of perdition. This idea would be debated and passed down and debated and passed down for centuries. John Calvin wrote, Original sin, therefore, seems to be a hereditary depravity and corruption of our nature diffused into all parts of the soul. They found scriptural basis for this argument in chapter 5 of Romans, which Catherine read today, where Paul argues that sin and death came into the world through Adam. But here's the thing. Saint Augustine, Bishop of Hippo, doctor of the church, he did not know Greek. And the translation he was using was from a guy named Ambrosiaster, and it was flawed. In verse 12, where the text is supposed to say, "So death spread to all because all have sinned," Augustine's translation said, "So death spread to all because in him," meaning Adam, "all sinned." In him, all sinned, meaning that Adam, when he bit that apple, he changed the fate of all of humankind. There is a big difference between all have sinned and in him, all have sinned. In him, all have sinned lumps us all together with Adam, allowing his actions to define us all for eternity. The other, all have sinned, leaves space for our own, still potentially inevitable, sin. But this textual misinterpretation is not the only flaw in this story of the fall. Jews and early Christians did not see humanity as irrevocably tainted. Eastern Christianity has questioned the West's strong grip on this idea of original sin from the beginning and promotes no such idea. And I'm with them. I do not believe in original sin. I do not believe that human beings are inherently bad, sinful from the start, incapable of good. I do not believe that sex passes this down to our children. I do not believe that humanity is so fallen that we have snuffed out the divine spark that was set in us. I do not believe that sin is the most true thing about us. And yet, sometimes we have leaned too far in the other direction, shunning all conversation about sin. I'm good. You're good. We're good. And while that feels more optimistic, I don't think that actually leads us to heal what is broken between us. It may be that humans hold within us inherent goodness. Surely God placed within us their image and called us good. Excuse me. And history's vast graveyards would supply strong evidence that we are not all good. A single family history would suffice as proof of human woundedness or sin. We are a wounded people. Theologian Marjorie Suhaki put it like this: "We are born into inherited webs of violence and oppression. This is inescapable." A network of relations, both life-giving and death-dealing, that stretch back for millennia. This network expresses itself in cultures and social structures, laws and wealth and systems of power, white supremacy, cis-heteropatriarchy. These touch our lives before we are even a thought in our parents' minds. White supremacy culture poisons the very air that we all breathe, the prenatal care we have access to or don't, the traumas that our parents or grandparents went through or the ones they were spared from. Before we are even born, we are caught up in a web of wounds. It is in the soil that our food grows in. It is in the air that we breathe. It is the blood in our veins. It is the ancestral memories that lie just beneath our brain's myelinations. It seeps into us. There is a woundedness about us that exists before we were born. It is a condition of existence, and we cannot avoid it. We have, you and I, inherited cycles of harm. In some of these cycles, we have been the victims. In others, we are the perpetrators or the benefactors. We are not the first of the sinners, but we are the inheritors of it. When a parent dies, so often their adult child is left with an attic full of stuff. A great aunt's wedding china that surely someone will have a use for. a box of television shows taped onto VHS. Some of the stuff is useful or beautiful, precious and worth keeping, and some of it is an albatross, harmful and strange and not letting us move on. We are heirs to great strength and beauty, and we are heirs to cruelty, to systems that we did not create, into which we did not choose to be born, but for which we are nonetheless responsible now. That old box of VHS is our problem now. The cycles set spinning endless generations ago are our problem now. What have we inherited? What sin, and yes, we can call it sin, has been passed down through your family, through your community, through our country? What have you inherited? What have we inherited, Old South Church? Where do we see ourselves caught up in the web, in patterns of addiction or cycles of abuse? Maybe in wealth, old enough and white enough to surely have its roots in slavery. We are responsible for the faithful stewardship of what we have inherited. If we want to be free, if we want to heal, we need to steward this inheritance toward healing. But before we can clear out the closets and the attics and the dark basements of our inheritance, before we can start fresh, we must first step into the attic, shine a light, and take a hard look at what we have inherited. And here is where I tell you that I will not be ending this sermon with an answer, by charting our course toward fixing things. Instead, I will sit here next to you, amidst the musty boxes of everything that has been given to us, looking around, taking stock, letting my heart break, just as God's does. Because only once we know what we have inherited, only then can we decide what to do with it. Amen.